all through the history of spiritual seeking, people's lives have been defined by the example and the uplifting presence and, of course, the teachings of those who have walked the path ahead of us. Each of us is unique in our relationship to God, but the path we walk is universal. Swamiji, many years ago, started writing a newsletter for Ananda when Ananda barely existed, and he called it the Banyan Tree. And the motto that he wrote at the top was, "Truth is one, the paths to it are many." If you've ever been in a country where banyan trees grow or you've seen one, this enormous tree, and then the roots just go out and out, and there are, many of the roots are above ground. And so you'll find sometimes this huge area that has all these what look like independent small trees standing, and you realize that they're all roots of this one giant tree, that it has all these different ways of nurturing itself and bringing the energy back to the center. So all of us in our lives are so unusual compared to one another in a very obvious sense. For some reason lately, whenever I've been in any crowd of people, I've just enjoyed just looking from face to face. And of course, you always know who you're looking at. No two people look exactly alike. Identical twins can deceive you, but people who know them well can always find those little bits of difference. And each one of us lives inside this world, which is so reasonable from our point of view. That's the part I love the most, is that we all made this particular body in this particular time to follow this particular karmic pattern because it was exactly the right one for us. The relationships we make, the souls that are drawn to us to be our children, the way we look, the health of our bodies, all of these things, it's marvelous to contemplate. And yet at the same time, the masters come and they definitely individualize the teaching, but still they just describe to us this process by which we can shift our attention from that which creates misery to that which creates happiness. We recently, as you all know, have started the distribution of a film we made this year about Ananda life, including Swamiji. And by Ananda life, I don't just mean the actual living of it, but the principles behind it. We spent the longest time kicking around different titles, just trying to figure out what that movie should be called. And finally came up with a very simple title, which is so apt, which you, most of you know, Finding Happiness. And when you stand back from it and really try to think, what is the essence of our attraction for the spiritual path and our willingness in the eyes of some people to sacrifice this or give up that? It's because we believe by doing this, the end result of it will be finding happiness. I've joked with David many times over the years. Before he came to Ananda, he ran a couple of successful enterprises and seemed to have the capacity to manifest what he imagined. And then, of course, we become devotees on the spiritual path, and all of that ambition doesn't cease to exist. It just becomes channeled in an impersonal way, in a desire to serve others and to serve the cause of the work instead of to serve oneself. And every so often you think of the path not taken. I've joked with you all, sometimes on Sunday mornings when we've had a particularly busy week and we see people going into Starbucks with their newspapers under their arms and just the Sunday morning saga in a world where the Sabbath no longer exists. I grew up in a time when they never scheduled children's events on Sunday morning because the assumption was you were going to church. Now you see all the soccer games and everything just happening. This whole just moving away from the idea of God in our lives. And I would love to say that the result is the finding of more happiness. But alas, I don't see it. I heard a snippet of an interview on the radio from a man who I think he was a scientist of some sort. He had kind of there was a cynicalness to his voice. I don't even know what his subject was. But they were talking about him. The interviewer was talking about how he used to be a religious person, and he talked about being confirmed in the Episcopal Church. And then they asked him, how do you feel about spirit now? And he said, I'm going to use St. Paul's words in a way I am sure he would not approve of. Because St. Paul said, when I was a child, I amused myself with the things of a childhood, but now that I'm a man, I occupy myself with the things of a man. And he was saying that, when I was a child, I believed in God, but now that I'm a man, I have repudiated it. But in his voice, you heard this, yeah, now that I'm a man, I occupy myself with these things. And it would have pleased me deeply to have felt that he'd found happiness. But there was nothing in him that made me feel that way. Swamiji talks sometimes. Sometimes people complain to Swamiji about his songs seem sad. And in fact, when we were making the soundtrack for this movie, we had this constant discussion with the professionals who were guiding us, because it was out of the question, absolutely off the table, that we would make a soundtrack for a movie about Ananda that wasn't Swamiji's melodies. I mean, those melodies could be creatively used. We didn't have to just take track one and track two and track three off of existing records, CDs, but there was no question. Some of the professionals who were working with us were deeply concerned because they said, Swami's music is sad, was the word they used. And in fact, when we put together just this mock trailer once just for the party that we had at the end, one of the technicians there insisted on pulling some music from who knows where it came from. It was absolute cacophony, totally harsh, and we have all the Ananda people walking around, and then you have this terrible music going on in the background. We watched it once, and after that we just pulled the soundtrack down and watched it in silence after that, because the disconnect was really there. But I was reading recently when someone was speaking to Swamiji about the sad quality of his music. And he says, well, in fact, that could be, that's a valid criticism. And this morning they sang that song, Memories, you know, children, they have every girl, young girl is a muse and every boy is a hero and we're going to mold the world after our desires. And now it's all just memories. And so, I mean, naturally the heart rebels against that. You want it to end as gloriously as you imagine it's going to. But reality sets in, doesn't it? And it's a lot more of a struggle to bring those ideals out, and the relationships get more convoluted. And Swamiji says, yes, his music is about that inner knowing that there is a reality, but we're not quite there. Now, for some of us, I don't hear that sadness. What I hear there is the promise. I hear the promise that, yes, this is the reality we seem to be facing, but the quality of that music, you see, is to turn the energy inward. And when we turn the energy inward, we begin to discover. This is the stages of spiritual growth. First, we have to interiorize our energy. Then we have to concentrate it inside. And then we find in two ways, both we can raise it and it will automatically raise. What happens in the world is that people's energy is always looking outward. I will accomplish this, I will have that, I will get this. And in the back of it, the reason everyone is doing it is because they hope at the end to find happiness. But alas, many don't. And as Master said, when we sort of use up the positive potential of the body that we're inhabiting and just reach the end of what we can learn from this particular unique configuration, then we put it down. We just put it down. Swamiji's, the woman who took care of Swamiji by cooking for him for the last 20 years of his life, Lila Hogendijk was her name. She died a year ago in the summer. She cooked for Swami, you know, all around the world for many, many years. She developed cancer. She didn't really acknowledge it until very close to the end. On her birthday, she cooked the last meal for Swamiji. And then the next day, she went to the doctor and confirmed what she knew was true, which is that she was riddled with cancer. And 1 month later, she left. Just lay down on her bed and then went away. And I was living at the, I was staying at the Village because we were filming Finding Happiness as it happened during that time. And I was staying with Durga, who was Leela's primary caregiver, and I heard the phone ring at 3 in the morning. And I knew there was only one reason why the phone was going to ring at 3 in the morning, and that was because Leela had passed. So I came out of my room, and Durga and I went right over. And Leela was curled up in her bed, as she had been. She was in quite a lot of pain at the end. So there was sort of certain positions that she would stay in. And there was her body. I don't know how many of you have had the opportunity to see a body after someone leaves it. It's a very unfortunate thing in the West that we do not have that experience on a regular basis, that we protect children from it, that we act as if somehow this is something that we all should be afraid of and be ashamed of to a certain extent. But I encourage you, if you ever are given the opportunity to actually be there, either when someone breathes their last or soon after, it's all of that longing. Somehow you understand how this whole story really evolves. And we sat, many people gathered at 3 in the morning, not many, but a dozen or so, just sitting around Leela's now still body. And you know, they often talk poetically about the extraordinary stillness of death. You know, there's so many things that happen to us in our lives that we know, but we don't quite know. You know, our heart is always beating. Our blood is always moving. Our breath is always flowing. And even though we sit still and our thoughts are going like this, even though we meditate very still or sit very still in a room, even on a more than conscious level, there's always all this movement and all this noise. As the life force just carries on its little business through us. And when we see all of that resolve in the absolute stillness, and the physical body is still there, but all of that longing has now just moved on to its next stage. It's, well, I think the only word I can use is thrilling. It's just thrilling to realize that we're just guests, even in our own body. This is something given to us to use for a while, and then after that, we'll be free to go on to another reality. And this is what the masters give us, again and again. I was made for thee alone. You know, I sometimes, as I started to say, I joke with David, you know, oh, I believe in many incarnations, for many incarnations, David and I together were probably extremely wealthy. There's a just kind of an ease and an expectation that way. It stays in me in an attachment to luxurious hotels. That's my last really big attachment. But I joke sometimes, especially when things are more of a struggle. Oh, if we'd only done this for ourselves, we'd be so rich by now. You know. But we wouldn't have found happiness. It's just as simple as that. And instead, you know, one can look forward without fear, you know, to the time when the whole thing is over and we'll just go on, you know. And why not live that way now? There was a popular movie that involved American Indians, and it was one of those really desperate movies where the poor, beleaguered band of American Indians was being utterly pursued and harassed by the heartless white people. Oh, it was a very long movie, and it, you know, it was going to end horribly, but it just took a long time to get there. But one of the chief characters, one of the noble Indian characters, there was a sort of beyond a spiritual element to it. And every so often he would see this image of an island in a river or something like that. And then finally, at the very end of this trek, he actually saw that island in the middle of the river. And it was physically there. Now it wasn't a vision, it was physically there. And this revelation came to him, and he spoke both with joy and also with regret. He said, ah, he said, that's the place of my death. He said, if I had only understood that earlier in my life, what a brave warrior I would have been. Because if he wasn't there, nothing, he wouldn't die. But you see, that's true for all of us. Whatever is going to be the conclusion of this is just going to happen from the unique, inevitable cycle that we're moving in through day by day. Knowing that, knowing how profoundly and deeply God holds us in the palm of his hand, what brave warriors we can be. God bless you.